in this Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And I want to give out the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And so many of you have told me you don't like to call in because you'd rather listen. So that's okay, however you want to do it. All right, before I get going, I do want to make a couple of announcements. I will be speaking in Ashtabula, Ohio, the weekend of the 7th through the 9th of September, in case anybody's up in that area. And all the details about these things are on my website, the contact numbers, and how you can get a hold of this and find more information. Ashtabula, Ohio, the weekend of the 7th to the 9th of September. Then the next weekend, I've got one of my classes in Chicago. And there's still plenty of room in that. This is my hypnosis classes that I give everywhere where I teach my technique. There's still room in the Chicago class if anybody wants to get a hold of our website and find out more information about it. Then I go out of the country the end of September, and I'll be in Australia, New Zealand the whole month of October till the middle of November. I've got 4 classes I'm doing over there. So any of you listening in who are in New Zealand or Australia, you can find out who to contact for those classes. I'll be in all over Australia doing all kinds of talks and classes and expos over there. I won't be back here till the middle of November. So I just want to let you know, check our website, Ozark Mountain, OZARKMT.com, for the contact information and the dates for these things. Okay, now I have a very special guest tonight, and I found the more I talk to her on the phone, I keep finding out we have more and more in common, and we have a lot of friends in common. But I think you can't be in this field and eventually not know everybody. But it's wonderful that we're going to have a lot of things to talk about tonight that in the metaphysical field that we are both interested in. My guest tonight is Britt Elders. And I know a lot of you already know Britt Elders. Okay, hi, Britt. You there?
Hey, hi, Dolores. How are you?
Oh, fine. I've been trying to get ready for this Australia trip. And
I'll tell you, it sounds like you're going to be super busy.
It's got so many parts to it. And you know what that's like, to work all the little things and the details out.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, Britt, I was looking at your bio, and you've been so busy in the UFO field and the metaphysics and the paranormal. And you've done so much with that. But when I start out, I always like to ask the guests to tell me about yourself and how you got started in all of this.
Well, I really think it goes back to my childhood. My father was literally a rocket engineer. He worked with Wernher von Braun on the early missiles.
Oh.
And so the thought that there was something out there in space, if we could get their birds up and flying, then why couldn't other people be doing this? This was perfectly natural to me. And my mother is a very gifted intuitive. So I grew up that all of the things, I thought all of this was normal. Let me put it that way. I didn't realize so many people had shut off to it after the age of 4.
Yeah.
And so I was very fortunate to have a household where a very left-brained engineer father and a very right-brained, creative, intuitive mother, and it just melded together beautifully. So they never questioned me when I said, oh, you know, I saw this, or this happened to me, or I was in some other land last night, and it wasn't a dream, I was really there. I grew up with that being okay, and I think that was really the foundation for me to open myself up to all of the exploration that we can do in this world.
Well, you know, so many parents, they try to shush the kids up.
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, I was fortunate when I was little. I had, quote-unquote, what other people call an imaginary friend, but he was real, and I wouldn't eat unless he had a place at the table, and he was my protector, and I knew it. And my parents never said, oh, that doesn't happen, that's not real. I mean, to them, he was as real to them as he was to me.
Well, you know, my oldest daughter had one when she was a little bitty thing, and she kept calling her Julie. And every time we crossed the street or anything, she'd say, Mommy, you got to take Julie's hand. she was very real.
That's the way I did it, too. I understand that.
But the thing was, the next child I had was a little girl, and we'd gotten so used to Julie that we named her Julie.
Aww.
But after that, you know, the imaginary friend stopped coming to my oldest, so who knows?
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder.
It certainly does.
Uh-huh.
But from there, I mean, my educational background is actually in English. I was an English major, and I just really loved language, especially English, and the ability to communicate in words is so important because they can be so misunderstood. And I also have another side to me which is very curious. So there was an investigative side in there, and my husband, Lee, and I created a company called Intercept, which is an electronic countermeasure company. We protect people and corporations from being eavesdropped upon with electronics. Then, you know, that was all going great, and life was wonderful, and a friend of ours, Lieutenant Colonel Wendell Stevens, wandered in. I know he's a friend of yours.
He's a friend of mine, too.
Yes, and he says, look, I want you guys to put your company behind this investigation. And we said, what's it about? And he says, whoa, UFOs. Well, Lee, who, you know, very left brain, he says, are you out of your mind? And I said, oh, cool. And we decided, we had a client in Europe, and we decided to stop in and just meet Meyer and see what was going on. We did. We came away shaking our head with a lot of evidence, physical evidence, not just stories. And I realized that everybody that has an experience, otherworldly or of this world, it is their personal truth. But
yeah.
Meyer had physical evidence. He had photographs, movie footage, metal samples, which were really the big key. All of this, witnesses, and there were landing tracks, and we were just shaking our heads. And that began a 5-year investigation. And we were all over the planet on that investigation. We were at places like JPL, Jim DeLaTosa, who was also the chief analyst on the Phoenix Lights footage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's a very good friend of ours and a wonderful, brilliant man. He started the photogrammetric analysis on the photographs, took them to U of A, took them to Scripps, all over the place. And then we ended up at JPL with them shaking their heads. So many different things were going on. At the same time that was going on, we were at IBM with Marcel Vogel. He was looking at the metal samples that we had under a scanning electron microscope and saying, we can't put that together here because it was a cold fusion process, which we did not have the capabilities of accessing until we had the space shuttle. And this is way back in 1978.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about the metal, though, was it was crystalline, and then it was a mineral, and then it was crystalline and mineral, and crystalline and mineral. And its composition was something that we wouldn't put together, because it had thulium. And thulium is a rare earth mineral that is very costly to extract. It's sort of a leftover mineral from the uranium process.
Oh, okay.
And that was supposed to be, according to Billy, this piece of metal we had was supposed to be part of the skin of the Palladian spacecraft.
Right,
so
I'm thinking you're talking about Billy Meyer, aren't you?
Yeah, I am talking Billy Meyer. That was our first case. We walked into this and went, okay.
Way back, okay.
Way, way back. And since then, you know, we finished the investigation with Meyer in 1984, and tried to get back to some form of normal life, which is basically impossible. Once your curiosity is piqued by UFOs...
Once you cross that line, there's no going back.
That's right.
Uh-huh. But, you know, I just want to tell you, I have a friend here, and he's trying to get this noticed by the laboratories and everything, but he has a piece that fell off of a spacecraft, and he saw it happen.
Wow.
We think it's like a residue.
Uh-huh.
Something from the jet, or whatever it is, the propulsion as it took off. Because when it hit the ground, it gets solidified. And he took it to laboratories, and they kept saying it has a composition of all kinds of metals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some rare metals in there. But he took it to Los Alamos. He wasn't going to let it out of his sight.
Right.
But they keep saying, oh, he probably made it in your garage.
And don't you love that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could get a hold of these rare metals and make them in my garage.
Uh-huh.
But they have really tried to get it away from him so they could have it, and he knows it would disappear if that happened.
That's very, very true. And unfortunately, we went through that experience back in, I believe it was 79 or 80.
Would you have... Some of your things disappear?
Yeah, we did. We, at that point, decided nothing leaves our hands again. Because
uh-huh.
It is so true. And especially if you're dealing with, let's just say, a metal, like maybe he has,
yeah.
That could create something unique.
Yeah.
This is what we went through with IBM. And I'll tell you a story I've never told on air, never written about. After the metal sample came up missing from Marcel Vogel's pocket, quote-unquote, about 5 years later, IBM in Switzerland developed their superconductive metal. And surprise, it had all of the same ingredients that the Billy Meyer metal had.
I wonder where they got the idea.
Gee! So since then, since Billy Meyer, we have investigated cases around the world, but since 1991, we've been very involved with what's going on in Mexico, and we've done 3 videos on it. It's just amazing what's happening down there.
Well, Keith, I was going to say, you're also a documentary maker, a producer, a filmmaker, aren't you?
Yes, yes. It's something I love. It there again goes back to the communication aspect of things. I think it's so important to share any information you get. And if you can do it where it's interesting, like you can with documentaries, then all the better.
Mm-hmm. Well, the man I had on just a week or so ago was also a documentary filmmaker, but he got tired of Hollywood and he just got out.
Yeah, I understand that.
He said he was so fed up with this reality TV stuff and all of these things. And he's started a website where he is going to be doing, like, TV. He's getting into, he said, the metaphysical. And he's going to have a free website where people can download a lot of things like this.
I think that's fabulous. I really do.
He wanted out of the money and stuff. He said that just wasn't where it was.
Yeah, when you do documentaries, you spend so much of your own money. We just like to recoup what we spend in it.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's never a big deal for us. It's something that we just want to share the information. And truthfully, there's no place out there to market DVDs or videos of UFO footage.
Well, that's what he said, you know, and he said he had it all in Hollywood. He had the big house, the car, the money, and it wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't satisfying.
No, it sounds like a curious spirit.
Yeah, so more of them are going off and following their own dream. And,
mm-hmm.
But let's get back to what you said. What's happening in Mexico that's so fascinating?
Well, in 1991, during the total solar eclipse, there was an object that was filmed by 17 different cameras from different locations around the city. And it actually was there during the duration of the eclipse. We got a call from a friend of ours, Jaime Malzahn in Mexico, and he says, I need your help. So we went down to see what it was. And we were amazed. It was sort of this hockey puck-looking object that was there throughout the eclipse. All of these different angles, we could triangulate size, and get an idea if it was a large object, a small object. We couldn't get exact dimensions. It really got our curiosity going. So we kept going back to Mexico, and there was more and more footage being sent to Jaime, who, by the way, is like the Mike Wallace of Mexico. He's just a very well-respected investigative journalist. These people would send him footage and say, help me figure out what it is. We would go down and meet with the people and look at the footage, and then a couple of years into it, on January 1st, 1993, there was a mass sighting over Mexico City, and it literally brought traffic on Reforma, which is the largest avenue that crosses the city, to a standstill.
Wow.
People got out of their cars, they leaned back on the hoods, they were busy watching what was going on in the skies. And we've got photographs of policemen pointing up and all of the traffic jam that was going on. It was amazing. So we thought, okay, this is really great. You know, something is beginning to happen here. It hasn't stopped. That energy of the excitement that the people have of seeing these objects in the air is still going on.
But, of course, you never hear a word about it here.
Oh, heavens forbid. I mean, we don't want to discuss anything that might have a possible reality to it. No.
Certainly. That's a, well, one man told me, well, if there was anything to this, it would be on CNN.
Well, I'll finish that story by saying I had have a friend who was a producer with CNN. I called and I said, look, I know you've got a crew down there in Mexico City. Get this footage. Get it up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Plus, this man said, he said, oh, the government wouldn't lie to us. If it was real, it would be all over the news.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, boy, are you naive.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, boy, I've been working with this for 20 years, you know, and I, you know, the UFOs and the abduction cases, so. But, so, I believe like you do, you know. But, boy, you know, you would think, how can they hide it if it was that visible?
Well, in the rest of the world, they don't seem to want to hide it. It was front page news in Mexico newspapers. It was on the evening newscast.
Uh-huh.
But we don't hear about it here.
No.
It's so sad. There are so many wonderful things going on in the world that, for some reason, our media feels a need to debunk. I don't know if it's on a personal basis or a grander scale, and to me that really doesn't matter. The fact that they feel a necessity to say it doesn't exist or totally ignore it, one of the two, it doesn't say much for us.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I travel a lot. You probably still do, too.
Yes.
But when I go to Europe, you hear news over there that it's talking about the United States. And when I get back and I'll tell my kids, wow, did you hear that story? And there wouldn't be a word about it here at all. So I always tell people that the news is censored. And you're going to get better news if you go out of the country.
That's true.
Or if you have some way access to getting an overseas news station, you're going to get a lot more truth news of the news anyway.
It is. It's very true, and you get a different perspective of it. In Mexico, just a few years ago, there was a big sighting. It was filmed by the Mexican Air Force. Mexico's government called Jaime in and said, talk to our generals, tell us what's going on. Jaime, of course, said, I don't know what's going on. However, you did capture something in your gun cameras that is not of, you know, that we recognize as being from this planet.
Yeah.
Mexico's government was very open to it. Shortly after that, I was in New York, and I had an opportunity to meet with, and I'll leave them nameless, some journalists, three, and I told them about this, and they laughed it off. These are people that could have gone on the air and said, all right, let's really look at this from an open mind standpoint. They wouldn't do it. Eventually, they did run the footage way after the fact, only to debunk it.
Yeah, it sounds very familiar.
It's so sad. And we have such wonderful things happening in this country, but they will never see the light of day here.
Mm-hmm. That's why I have a lot of my guests, you know, are very much involved with this. And we tell a lot of things on this show that nobody else ever hears about.
Right. I think that this is so important, and I love the fact that you're doing that, Dolores, because there is a lot happening throughout the world, and people need to be informed. You can't make a based educational decision on anything unless you have information.
That's what I believe. And I'm like you. I have this great curiosity. I want to learn. I want to know. I like to ask lots and lots of questions. I want to know everything about anything.
Right. It makes a difference in how you approach life, too. If you have that curiosity and you want to learn something new every day, you're out there doing it. You're learning. But if you get stuck in the mundane and you don't want to expand that mind at all, you're stuck in the mundane and you're not going to learn.
Yeah. I tell people that at my lectures. I said, don't believe what I say. Don't believe what anybody else says. I said, go out and ask lots and lots of questions. Find out for yourself and make up your own mind.
That's right. I mean, I would never expect anyone to agree with my position on any of the cases we've investigated. All we can do is present the information that we found and document it for people the best we possibly can. Beyond that, it's up to them to make a decision. To superimpose my beliefs on someone else, I think, is as wrong as keeping information away from people.
That's what I tell them. I said, you make up your own mind. Don't give your power away to anybody. And your truth is your truth. It may not be mine, but at least you found out something for yourself.
Right. Right.
And that's what I always leave my lectures at, you know. Just let them soak it in, and then they can make up their own mind.
Well, that personal decision is huge. I don't know. I think more and more journalists are probably beginning to become more curious because things are happening all over the world, and it has to be crossing the news desk somewhere. But at the same time, I think people are still stuck in this 1950 mentalities that if they say they saw something, they're going to be harassed.
Oh, yeah. But I think, too, the journalists may be afraid of losing their jobs, too.
Yes, I agree. I agree, but that should never be the case. A journalist should be a journalist. They shouldn't be somebody's puppet.
Yeah. That's what Don, you know, who puts on this network, he said, you can talk about anything you want.
I love it.
Okay, but that's, anyway, you've made many documentaries about UFOs, haven't you?
We have. We've done 4 on the Meyer case. Contact from the Pleiades, which is a documentary that was made in 1982 and has been off the market for a long time. It's a wonderful film, and we're just getting ready to re-release it on DVD, and I'll let you know when that happens. But I would say probably by November it'll be available on DVD.
Is that the one where it shows the craft above the tree and the tree is moving?
Yes.
Because that was fantastic. They said it had to have been caused by some kind of a downdraft coming from the craft.
Yes, and it's so interesting because when we did that documentary, we had been all over the place. We were even at Boeing Labs with the sound analysis from the craft. We got kicked out of Boeing Labs, actually, when they figured out it was a UFO we were talking about. But we had the footage analyzed in Japan, who at that time had state-of-the-art stuff. And they said that it was absolutely something moving past the top of this huge tree that would make it move. It's something that couldn't be superimposed. Now, we're back at a time when PCs and Macs were not household items.
No, you remember Billy Meyer only had one arm in that very primitive camera.
Right, right. It was stuck on infinity. He had dropped it, and the shutter speed was stuck on infinity, so whatever he aimed at is what he got.
Yeah, but they just crucified that poor man.
They did. I think, you know, there's this concept that says it's too good to be true, it must be.
Yeah.
Well, that was even our feelings when we first saw the photographs. These are too good to be true.
That's what Wendell said when he went over there. He wanted to check it out, and he couldn't believe it either.
Right. And then when we started in on the science and people at JPL, we're looking at the photographs saying, whoa, I can't figure out how this would be done. When people at USGS were looking at the photographs and saying the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to sort of restructure your thought process a little bit, because it does make a big difference. And the metal, the sound, the photographs, the movie footage, there's a lot of rumors out there that say it's all been hoaxed, but when you take it back to that time period when we were doing the investigation and the laboratories we went to, which are not lightweight laboratories, these are major laboratories that are still developing things in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
When they come back and say, look, we don't know how it was made, we don't know how the photograph could have been hoaxed, the rumors don't mean anything.
Yeah. But then, you know, their only defense is just is to discredit. They always say, you know, kill the messenger.
Right, and they do horrible things to people. There's a whole group out there that just loves taking people apart.
Yeah.
Not with any validity behind it, but strictly through innuendo and rumor.
Yeah. Because instead of, I don't know if they believe it's real or not, but the idea is just to discredit the person.
Right.
Then they figure no one will believe them.
Well, and we also have another problem that I run into, Dolores, and that's when there is a contactee, you know, such as yourself, with all the information that you get, the concept of the normal person is to put them on a bit of a pedestal. And I'm sure you've experienced that. We saw Billy go through it. We've seen contactees. In fact, we labeled something called the contactee syndrome, where they hit a space and they make a choice to either accept what they are with their foibles and the gift they have, or they just build this wall of illusion around them that they're perfect and take the accolades whether they're due or not.
You mean they're thinking, otherwise I wouldn't have been contacted?
Right.
If I had to be somebody special.
Right.
That kind of thing, okay.
And we have run into this time and time again.
Well, on the lecture circuit, you run into them all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I know, that has to be something for you. But these people, all of the humans out here, we're all alike. None of us are perfect. We're all different. We have to be more allowing in the fact that these people that are contactees, that provide great information or great documentation for the rest of us, are human. They're not superhuman. They're not the ETs, and I'm not too sure ETs are superhuman either.
Well, no, they're not.
Yeah, they're just, it's an equality thing that's a little different in spacing. But they're just people, and allow them to not be perfect.
That's what I tell them. I said, it's just because, well, I always say when you come into this life, you know, you are not a body. You have a body.
Right.
And this is just a vehicle, a suit of clothes, I call it a costume, you put on for this part in this play right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many of others out there who are different kinds of costumes. And you have also played those parts in other lives, and you may in future lives. There's nothing different. It's just that it's a different type of being.
Right.
And that's why I try to look at it, because I have not found the negativity that a lot of these other people have come up with.
You know, I haven't either, and I've worked with a lot of abductees that once they get past that initial fear of either a meeting that they didn't recognize was part of their own creation, or a meeting with something, someone that did not look exactly like them, when they get past that fear and really get into their own consciousness about what took place, they seem to come up with the fact that, I really did make the decision to have this experience. And then they lose the fear. They jump from being an abductee to a contactee.
Yeah, see, that's what I find in my work, is that the emotion is caused by the conscious mind.
Right.
Because anything you don't understand, you're going to be afraid of, and you bring in fear, which is the strongest emotion that a human has. And this is going to discolor anything they do remember.
Right.
That's what I've found. So that's why I use my work in hypnosis to separate that part.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not found negativity. I've found answers, and to me it's very believable.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I find more and more answers. Of course, those answers lead to more questions.
Oh, yes. That's what I every time I think I've got it all, then another one pops up that leads me to another way of thinking.
Yeah, there is no such thing as having all the answers. It doesn't exist.
That's finding out.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what makes it exciting.
It is. It's the search. It's the quest. And
we're not going to get bored anytime soon anyway.
Oh, absolutely not. And all of this can bring about such incredible experiences on a personal level, and I think on a global and universal level, too.
But you never had any problems with your documentaries. They were exhibited, weren't they?
Yes, and no, we never did. We didn't have any problems with our books either. We wrote the books Contact from the Pleiades, Volume 1 and Volume 2, big photojournal 12 by 12-inch coffee table books.
And those ones with all the photographs.
Right. And we never had a problem with that. We had people call us and say, oh, you can't do this book. They're going to end up blowing up the presses, and there'll be attempts on your life. We never had a problem. And we were very fortunate, and it's quite possible because we had Intercept, our company, and we did so much of the work through there.
Yeah.
What was interesting was it was sort of a blessing in disguise to have that, because we got into laboratories that normally would never open the door to a UFO case.
Mm-hmm.
So we had access to even some government labs, which was wonderful. And the agreement was we stay there with it. We do not leave it alone. They agreed to that. They did the analysis, they got the information, and we got the information.
Okay, because you learned now. You don't let it out of your sight.
Oh, no. No, we did that once. Never again.
Well, you know, I had Nancy Talbot. I don't know if you know her.
I don't know her, but I know of her work.
She was on, about a month ago, talking about all the fantastic things she's getting proof of with laboratories, and they can't understand what's going on, so she's at a cutting edge here, too.
Wonderful.
And you know Linda Wooten Howe.
Oh, yeah. Linda's done some fabulous work.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, there are people out there who are pushing the envelope. You know, we keep wanting to know more and more.
Yeah, and I think that that's really healthy. I mean, sometimes you hit a point where you say, oh, my gosh, how much more can I possibly want to know? How much more is there to know? And you just want to take a deep breath and go run and hide for a little while and assimilate things. And then you realize, wow, you've barely cracked it. There's so much more there.
Because, you know, I'm working on the third book in my Convoluta Universe series.
I can't wait.
I thought it was all finished. And I got another piece of information that goes a totally different direction. It's that same thing of, oh, my gosh, I thought I had heard it all, and now... And they end it by saying, there is more.
Uh-huh. Well, good.
Dangle the carrot, yeah.
I think that carrot is so important, and especially right now because of what we're going through, not only in the consciousness shift area, but also with what we're going through on personal, individual levels.
Oh, yeah.
I think the more information we can gather through sources like yours, it's just huge, and we can't ignore it.
Well, see, I know those you're also interested in the alternative medicine and the natural foods.
Yes.
I get many, many clients that come to me now who are doctors who are wanting out of the medical and the drugs, and they're going over to the alternative.
Fabulous.
I've had several of them on my show. Just a few weeks ago, I had a doctor who has a natural clinic outside Nashville, and he's focusing on autism. And they have found it goes back to diet.
Yeah.
And he said they are curing autism.
It's amazing what's going on with alternative medicine, and it is so important. I can't stress it enough to people. Don't always take the word of the MD. Find out. Take the time to research. There's information all over the place, and with the Internet now, what it is, it's very easily to accessible, but
That's when I have my clients, I tell them to go to the homeopaths, the naturopaths, find out about the alternative, and they won't have to have operations and the drugs.
That's I think, the best way to go. I've seen alternative medicine, and I'm talking things that sometimes cannot be done in this country because there's only 13 states in the U.S. that allow naturopaths to practice under a license.
Mm.
Yeah, that's pretty bad in itself. But I've seen cancer cured. I've seen lupus cured. I've seen diabetes, which is epidemic,
yes,
cured. And it doesn't take much.
This is what I work with all the time, you know, so I know it's real. And I'm working with a group of doctors in Moscow who they're wanting to unite the natural healers of the world. They want to form an organization. They're thinking, you know, like Doctors Without Borders.
And right.
Healers Without Borders. And so they are very much aware over there that this is the wave of the future.
I think it's not only the wave of the future. I think it is somehow even more important than that. We have to get back to the natural means. Anything that we have created an illness with, chemical sensitivities, environmental pollution, stress, whatever it is, we can reverse.
Yes. And see, a few months ago, my company published the largest herbal encyclopedia that's ever been printed. And I had the herbalist on the show, and she'd been doing this for 35 years, and she gave some very eye-opening information about how the drug companies have taken the herbs and pulled out the active ingredient to create a drug.
Mm-hmm.
But she said in the herb itself was also safeguards against side effects.
Right.
So they didn't synthesize that part. So, you know, these are the things I think people should know.
Yes, well, you know, the herb company or the pharmaceutical companies obviously didn't think that far.
Yeah. And I know I've also had clients who work with the drug company, so I've heard it from the horse's mouth. I know what's going on. But if people would just realize, you know, up until just, not even this century, everything was done with herbs and natural remedies.
Well, when you follow it back, okay, food, Hippocrates said it best, let medicine be your food, let food be your medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we used to cure things. It was with roots, it was with barks and leaves and extracts and compressed oils. And that was true all the way up, really, until World War I.
Yes.
In World War I, we started developing these new antibiotics and things like that. In World War II, that became the mainstay and the big way to treat things. Then after World War II, we lost the whole concept of organic food because everybody was in such a hurry. That's when the world started moving faster.
Then it all went for drugs.
It sure did.
So people don't understand, this has not been around that long with the drugs.
That's right. And yet herbal remedies, homeopathy has been around longer than the pharmaceutical drugs.
Definitely.
And herbal remedies have been around forever.
I think it's so funny when you see the commercials and even they're trying to debunk certain herbs. And they'll say, well, it hasn't been tested by the FDA.
Well, don't get me going there.
It's only been around for 3,000 years, but it hasn't been tested. You know?
There's a problem with the FDA. When you really look at who's paying for the analysis being done that is being supplied to the FDA, you land right back in the house of the pharmaceuticals.
I know.
It's horrible.
Because I had one man who come to me with a client who works for them, and he said, we are being experimented on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people protest against animals being experimented on, and they don't know the humans are.
I think he's absolutely right. Well, just watch the commercials for any number of pharmaceutical products they're advertising on television, and there's all those little disclaimers. It may cause, and you think about the side effects, and it's like, oh, please, what are we doing to ourselves here?
But, you know, yet with the herbs and the minerals, there are no side effects.
I agree with that, and I realize that there is some documentation that various herbs have various side effects, but if they're taken properly...
That's it. Anything can be misused.
Right.
But, you know, definitely drugs can be misused, but anything. If you just have to use your head about anything you're going to take.
Right.
So I keep pushing people to at least check it out, because it certainly can't hurt people.
No, and it can help so many. It is just absolutely amazing. And the things that they're doing in Mexico, we've spent a lot of time with doctors down in Mexico just trying to find out how they do what they do and why there are no problems with what they do.
Yeah.
They use human milk colostrum, which is the nutrients from breast milk.
Yeah.
They test the women to make certain that they're not carriers of any diseases. It is then totally sanitized and bottled, and they give injections to people that are suffering from things like cancer, leukemia, and they are seeing wonderful results from this. There's a process that was originated in Mexico way back in the 30s called insulin potentiation therapy. It is amazing, and there are doctors in the U.S. that are doing this. Unfortunately, the big problem right now that people are experiencing with alternative medicine is insurance companies won't cover it.
Yes.
And that has to change.
It does, because I go to a homeopath.
Yes.
She says she sees all these old people out there. She knows she could help them, but they can't come to her because she's not covered with Medicare.
Right.
Even though she could help them where they wouldn't need the medicines and they wouldn't need to go back to the doctors.
Isn't that awful?
But, you know, it's going to have to be included to where it can be covered.
Right. We've got to get to that point. I don't know that our Congress will take it seriously enough to do that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to get to a point where we look at alternatives without the pharmaceutical houses controlling them.
Yeah.
Because then we're just poisoning ourselves again.
Yeah.
And if we can get to that point and the House and the Senate can open their eyes and their minds a little bit, it would be wonderful.
But, you know, I think there's a movement out there, it's much bigger than the pharmaceuticals will admit, that people are moving more and more toward the natural and the herbal and the alternative.
Well, look what happened with Premarin. I mean, this is a hormone that is made from mare's urine. And it was the quote-unquote estrogen replacement that will solve all problems. Then they find out, you know, breast cancer has links to it and all of these other things. When that got into the press, and it came through the European press to this country, people went, whoa. And they went to more natural, more gentle ways of dealing with menopause.
Yeah. And that's when I tell people there are herbal things out there that will help them without worrying about all of that.
That's so true. And then you've got, for things, instead of doing heavy antibiotics, if you get cut or scraped or anything like that, you have things like lumen lights. And the light frequency actually kills the bacteria. And this was developed by NASA. This is not a, it sounds kind of woo-woo. Until you really get in and research it, it was something that was developed by NASA for use on the space shuttle for illnesses. It's phenomenal.
I'm just reading in the U.S., Newsweek, too, where they're talking about the new way of treating heart attacks is with cold.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, but it's so simple. How can it work? Be doing all these drugs and everything. But sometimes it goes back to what is simple and basic.
That's right, and I think the more simple and basic you get, quite often, the better the result.
Mm-hmm. But, I know the doctor I had on about the autism, he definitely believes, and him and this whole group, there's a whole website on it, they definitely believe that most of it was caused by the vaccinations and the shots.
Yes, yes. I followed that. I've known some families that have suffered through that.
Uh-huh.
It's horrendous. It is just, it's devastating on so many levels that we can't even begin to really comprehend. And it is so sad. these children are generally quite gifted in one or two specific areas. But I've talked to parents that have, in fact, there's a wonderful book out there. I think it's called The Cure for Autism. This woman has two autistic boys, and she believes it was the vaccinations that caused the problem because of the mercury in the vaccinations and the body's reaction to it.
That's what this doctor says.
She cured it with diet. She got them off gluten, which is all white flour.
He said milk, wheat, and gluten.
Right.
But he said the hard part is to getting the parents to cooperate to keep the children off of this and get them on a different diet.
Oh, boy. I can imagine. Especially with kids today, because they demand and they get.
Yeah.
And they're raised on sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another big problem when it comes to this. And that has also been tested and analyzed and proven beyond a doubt that it is a major contributor.
Well, he said he can see results in only a few days if they start switching their diet.
Yeah.
If he can get the child before they're 6 years old, they can cure it. So he said there's a lot of hope out there. People only knew these things.
Well, that's why shows like yours are so important, getting this information out there, because it is something that is not strange. It's not abnormal. It's something that everybody needs to be aware of.
But another thing we were always trying to stress, too, is don't take these flu shots.
Oh, boy, do I agree with you there. And it's rough because I have elderly parents, and, you know, they're always saying, did you get your flu shot? Mom, I don't do that. You know, I don't do that stuff. And they don't understand it because they've been ingrained with this concept that the doctor knows best, the doctor will protect you, and isn't always true.
That's what I say. I don't do shots. But he said there's embalming fluid in the flu shot.
Wow, I hadn't heard that. That is really scary.
And, you know, there's a lot of things in there, he said, you don't want in your body. And they're put in as preservatives.
Mm-hmm.
They will harm the body.
Sure.
He said, not only shots, there's nothing in there. It's totally different than the shots we had when we were kids.
And I've heard that before.
No, it's not at all the same as what they're giving the kids now. And they keep coming up with more and more different kinds of vaccinations, for diseases that aren't even that important. And I don't know, you can tell there's something else behind it.
Yeah, I agree. And I wondered sometimes if the vaccinations that they're giving people or recommending to, like, girls, this new vaccination they've got out there.
Yeah, but what about the cervical cancer?
Yeah, there is no way I would let a daughter experiment with her body that way.
Well, they said they've only been experimenting with this for 8 years.
Yeah.
They have no idea what the side effects are going to be.
Right.
They could have a whole generation of young girls that who knows what could be happening to them. I don't agree with any of that.
No, I just can't get there. I can't see that there's any rationale that would make that legitimate.
I think they said there isn't any real proof that it even works. So, you know,
how could they know? It hasn't really been tested long enough.
Why inject all these things into your body?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to steer people more toward, eating healthy, staying away from heavy meats and, more fruits and vegetables, things like that.
If you do that, you'll start to feel a big difference in your energy. I mean, I did vegan for a while, but I found that I was just too spacey. I'd be sitting there typing away, working on ShirleyMcLean.com. And my brain is gone. So I thought, okay, I got to ground it out a little bit here. And I do incorporate some fish into my diet and some poultry every now and then.
Yeah.
But the primary source of everything I do is vegetable and fruit. In the morning when I get up, I throw a banana, an orange, and frozen strawberries or blueberries in a blender with a scoop of vitamin C powder and protein powder, and that's breakfast. It'll keep me going for 5 hours.
Me too, except I put my minerals and herbs and everything in there also.
Yeah, I usually do that in the afternoon when I need a boost.
because I don't like to take the capsules.
I don't either. You only get 30%. If you're taking a capsule that says it has 100 milligrams, you're only getting 30% of that by the time it goes through the digestion process.
Which my homeopath does a hair analysis.
Oh, very good.
And that way I know what minerals I need and what toxins are in the body. So they are in capsules, so I just dump them in the smoothie, and that's what I do, too.
Mm-hmm.
I had a raw egg, too, though.
Yeah, I haven't done that for a while.
You know, it gives you a little more protein, or maybe some whey powder, but...
Yeah, that's what I use.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing that I try to do in the morning is have some apple cider vinegar in water or lemon juice in water, because that helps the body alkalize. And when the body is alkalized, you don't get sick.
And that's what I'm always telling them. Apple cider vinegar is so important. You can cure just about anything. Also, magnesium is of tremendous importance.
You know, it's amazing to me that people are just beginning to get the fact that magnesium makes almost everything in the body work properly.
Yes. I had one client who was an emergency room doctor, and she said when somebody comes in having a heart attack, she gives them magnesium in the IV, and it stops the heart attack.
Wow.
But the other doctors keep saying, but you're supposed to give them all these drugs.
The magnesium is cheaper.
She said, why? It works with no side effects.
That's exactly it.
So there some doctors out there are beginning to get it anyway.
Yeah, well, we have a great naturopath. We work with several here in Arizona. And the big thing they've all told me is that magnesium you have to take, especially if you're female or male concerned about osteoporosis, because if you're just taking calcium without magnesium, zinc, and vitamin D, you're not doing yourself any good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need the name brand pharmaceutical stuff. You can do it with actual minerals that are so important, and the trace minerals that we miss these days because our water is so purified, everything has been so purified, we're missing many, many trace minerals. So it's important to take a trace mineral supplement of some kind.
That's what I tell people, too. My homeopath said magnesium is so important for blood pressure.
Yes.
And it's also, I take mine at night, and there's no way you're going to stay awake. It puts you to sleep.
That's true.
I take it on the planes, too, if I'm going to have these real long flights.
I do, too. If I'm going to be flying, it's a definite. That's got to be with me.
But it relaxes the muscles and the nerves. Yeah, I'm watching the clock, and I'm going to have to stop because in just another minute or so, I think he's going to pull the plug.
Okay.
But I do want to mention, you do work with Shirley MacLaine's website, too.
I do. I'm the CEO of ShirleyMacLaine.com.
Uh-huh. I don't have enough time. I was going to ask, how did you ever get involved with her? But I don't know if we have enough time.
I'll try to scoot it in real quick.
Okay.
Shirley contacted us while she was riding out on a limb. She had heard about our work with Billy Meyer and wanted to go meet him. And
wait,
Lee said, whoops, sorry, we're not running tours. And that, just the fact that he was so direct, and she is very direct, it created a friendship that has been lasting since 1980.
Okay.
We did take her to meet Billy, by the way.
Well, so see, you've been involved with her for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I'd say we've been best friends now for about 27 years.
Oh, boy. That's why now you're running the website. And if anybody, you don't have your own website, though, do you?
No, I'm too busy with hers.
That way they can't really get a hold of you if they wanted to ask you any questions.
Just send me an email at Britt@ShirleyMacLaine.com.
Oh, okay. That way they can get a hold of you.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to go or he will pull the plug. But thanks, Britt, for coming on.
Thank you, Dolores. This has been fun and a very fast hour.
It did. It popped in, and it's a real honor to have you on, and I'm glad you accepted.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. And good night, everybody.